Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Happy Monday, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. And for those of you in the United States who might be tuning in today, happy Memorial Day to you. And thank you so much. I'd like to take a moment to pause and thank all of our vets who make our freedom possible in the United States. So special thank you to everybody. I know I have many family members, including my grandfather, who served in the Marine Corps. And so to all of you out there who might be tuning in, thank you to all of our veterans. And today on the show, we're going to be talking a little bit about accountability. But before we get into accountability, I'd like to take a moment and also thank our sponsors, because without them, today's show wouldn't be possible. The folks over at Markham Search LLC. Markham Search offers premier professional recruiting services throughout the United States, so please do keep them in mind for all of your temporary, direct hire, and executive staffing needs. Today we have with us on the show Hernani Alves. Hernani is an entrepreneur, author, international speaker, and executive consultant with over 20 years of business experience as a sales executive for a $3 billion company. He's the founder of Balanced IQ, a company that helps leaders build world-class teams focused on getting sustainable results in varying economic climates. His consulting work includes companies such as Starbucks, REMAX Gold, GBB Wealth Management, Stanford University Counselors, and several others. Hernani is donating a portion of his book and speaking proceeds through the Ticket to Dream Foundation to help foster kids get the support they need to thrive and create hope for a better tomorrow. You can find out more about Hernani and Balanced IQ and the opportunity to have him speak or to have him perhaps on your podcast or at your next live event at hernanialez.com. Thanks so much for joining us today, Hernani.
Hi, Jennifer. How are you doing?
I'm amazing. How's your Memorial Day going?
This is great. Yeah, just the way you started off. I'm so grateful for our military or active ones, you know, everybody that sacrificed their lives, including the family. So thankful for them. So grateful. They'll never be forgotten.
Yeah, it's really something that, you know, we're so privileged to even be able to have a show like this and to be able to speak our truth and share our opinions. It's only because of their ability to fight for our freedom that we have access to free speech and to being able to have podcasts and radio shows where we can discuss whatever topic we choose to discuss. So I totally agree, and I'm very grateful that we have this chance today. So tell me, Hernani, tell me a little bit about you. How is it that you became this author and speaker, and how did you become interested, most importantly, in this concept of accountability, which is what we're going to be talking mostly today about?
Awesome. We're going to be talking about the naughty word accountability, right?
In the workplace.
People don't like to talk about that. Oh my gosh, I hope we got some listeners listening. But it is one of those words that if you really go back, accountability equals love. And kind of growing up, I made some really bad decisions, and I had my dad hold me accountable. And for years, I wasn't a big fan of my dad. I didn't understand why he did that. But then once I started having some obstacles and challenges in life, it kind of reflected back to, I've got this story about cow number one. I always reflect back to cow number one about just making sure that I follow through and get what I'm going to get done and live up to my expectations of what we expected. So it really came back to love. So
before we talk about anything else, I want to speak on behalf of many of our listeners who are probably tuning in from wherever in the world they might be right now. And they're saying, wait a second, Jennifer, I think I just heard Hernani say that accountability equals love. Tell me a little bit about what do you mean by that? Because I know a lot of us, when we get called to the carpet for something, or if your boss calls you into the office and says, hey, Jim, where's this project that was due yesterday at 5 p.m.? That's not necessarily, it doesn't feel like love when that's happening, for many of us, at least.
No. And if you really reflect back on and kind of look at your career and how you got to where you're at today and who some of your mentors were or some of your favorite teachers or some of your favorite coaches or whoever really had a big influence in your life, you'll probably reflect that they probably held you accountable to this higher standard, to this higher expectation, just kind of like I do with my kids now. And that's where the love part comes into it. But as soon as you say love in the workplace, most people are like, hold on, you can't say that. You're going to HR.
Pause.
I mean, that's crazy. So I always like to talk about there's when you kind of look at love, there's five levels of love that what they represent. And what most people go to is the first level, and that's romantic love. That's the one that you kind of have with your significant other, your spouse. And then there's the second love, which is family love. People, your siblings, your parents, your children, some people that are just really close to you, you love them in a different way than you would love somebody romantically, right?
Right.
And then there's the next three, and these are the really important parts of love. It's the humanity love, helping other people. So, you know, kind of looking at Memorial Day today, looking at our soldiers, how much they love and how much love they gave us to give us this freedom. That's humanity. When you're getting on an airplane and there's somebody that needs help to put their bag on the overhead baggage, this is where you kind of just step in and just help that person. You really don't know who they are, but you're just going to do that because you love to help other people. So that's humanity love. And then there's two other ones, friends. We've got some friends that we love that they know a lot about us. We'll do anything for them. We'll always be there for them. And then there's teammates, kind of people that you either work with at work or some of the athletic that you just really create such a strong bond that you really, truly love that. And those are the three different loves that we're talking about is that accountability part of it.
So tell me, so when we're talking about love, I know you gave the example and you said your father held you to account. And like many of us, you know, when we go through our teenage years, your mom or dad may say, no, you can't stay out past midnight till 3 a.m. or you can't do this or you need to do your homework. And it does feel constricting. Like for a lot of us, it can feel like, oh, this, you're taking away my freedom. But to your point, you said, okay, you grew up and you could see that your dad really wasn't that bad of a guy, that he actually loved you. And that's why he was holding you accountable. So can you give me an example of how that might show up in the business setting of where that could show up as love instead of your boss just being a jerk?
Yeah. So I'll kind of share the story about cow number one. And when you read the book, that's how I start off with, because that's really, that was my first foundation of love. And when you live on a dairy, as I did at 9 years old, you're required to kind of help anybody help do chores and do different things. So there was one day after school, I got off the bus, went straight to the barn, and my job was to milk cows while my dad went and kind of fed and did different things so we could all go inside the house together and have dinner. Well, cow number one was the very first calf ever born on our dairy. And now she had grown up and she had calved herself, and now it's time for her to go in the barn. And I remember when she came in and she has her number one tag, it was very symbolic. You're like, wow, here's cow number one. I remember when she was just a calf and here she is now. Well, when they first go to a barn, they've never been there before, so they don't know what to expect. I've got grain. I'm trying to entice her to go in with grain, just trying to get her in there. I finally do, and now I've got to put the machine on her to milk her, and I just couldn't do it. I'm 9 years old. I'm about 75 pounds. We're talking about a 1,500-pound animal that's just kicking and going crazy and is like, get me out of here. Well, okay. I tried to put the machine on her, and then I eventually couldn't do it, and I just let her go. And I opened the gate and just let her go. And I started cleaning up. And all I wanted to do was go back inside the house and get dinner because it was just cold. I had manure all over me. About 10 minutes into it, all of a sudden I hear the gate open up again. And here comes cow number one frantically back into the stall. And I hear my dad's footsteps. And I think we all kind of know what our dad's footsteps sound like when he's not very happy.
Exactly.
Very heavy. Yeah. So dad came in, but I made me a bring the cow in, gave me the biggest spanking I've ever gotten.
Oh, geez.
And at that point, yeah, because, you know, the timeout wasn't invented back then yet. There's no such thing as timeout. So my dad, and I thought I was done since I got this spanking. Now I could just go home and cry and everything would be fine. And I remember him grabbing me from the collar behind and goes, no, you got to go finish what you started. And he turned around and I had to go actually milk her properly. And there's this mechanism that you can put on the cow in their hips to where they won't kick you and you could put the machine on. If I would have just done that from the beginning, I would have done it just right. And I would have already been inside the house. So fast forward this in 2007, when we're going through this whole entire, where the sky is falling for some people. And I had some executives around me that thought the sky was falling. I was able to kind of step in and say the sky isn't falling. We got to just start doing some things that are within our control and make sure we don't cut any corners and get the team realigned on how we can go and execute and do it right. And I just remember, you know, it had that flashback of my dad telling me, okay, go finish what you started. There's a lot of people depending on you. And then that's where that accountability stage of it came together. Does that help cement that?
Yeah, it does. And I have a similar situation for myself as when I was very young. I started my career, I think, in 2003 or four. And I was very lucky. I began a recruitment right at the peak of the market. And so I was able to help hundreds of people get jobs, from executives all the way on down. And I'll never forget when 2007 hit and people, entire companies I had placed people at began to close and people were being laid off. I felt accountable because I thought, my God, you know, I helped these people land the jobs. I coached them through the process. And that's actually what had me open my own company. Is I went to my superiors at the time and I said, guys, I can't sleep at night. Like, these people are my responsibility. I placed them here. And I said, let's do something with our company to help them. What if we open a division of this old company I worked for and help them, kind of like an outplacement thing, get back to work? And the worst thing my old bosses could have said to me is, J Hill, which is my nickname, that's a great idea. It sounds like too much work. You should go do it on your own. And I was so hell-bent that I was like, done. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to change the world. And I started blogging and doing radio and TV. And that was the beginning of me owning my own company, which led to where I am today. And it wouldn't have been possible if I hadn't wanted to be accountable and take care of the people who I'd placed in those jobs.
Absolutely. You took action. That was the other big key thing, is many times people don't take action. They know what they want to do, but they're just kind of waiting for something to happen. It's almost like the lottery. You're hoping that you're just going to win it someday and you're going to have all this money. And I always ask people, tell me somebody you know that has won the lottery. Many times they don't know. But when I ask them, tell me about successful people, what makes them successful? They can normally share with me a story or somebody that they know that didn't have it, and all of a sudden they took action and got it. And the main times it comes from just making successful screw-ups.
Yeah, and that's the thing I think about leadership and in today's society, is that one of the cruxes that I think a lot of young adults are facing, and I see this with people who are entering the workplace right now, is that they're given awards like great job. And I'm all for it. I think we should definitely encourage people to be successful. But I think the generation that's coming up right now was told great job, and they were not permitted the opportunity to fail, so that God forbid they get into an office setting and there is a failure, instead of having that opportunity to be accountable for it and say, you know what, I screwed up, I made a mistake, let me see how I can learn from this and fix this, they shut down mentally and emotionally, will change jobs, they become reactive. And I think that we all have the capacity, no matter what age we are, what generation we are. I remember I had a millennial who worked with me many years ago, and it was one of the proudest moments I had ever had, her nanny. I was actually walking into a speech. It was a 4:30 speech. The call came in at 4:15 from a very irate client who was asking me, Jennifer, why is Betty not here for her 4 o'clock interview? And I said, you know what? Let me look into this. I didn't go into my speaking engagement. And I stepped out and made a call to the recruiter. And I'll never forget. I said, you know, can you tell me what's going on? The candidate didn't show up. And he said, Jen, I'm really sorry. She called at 7:30 a.m. this morning. I wrote it down on a post-it note and I forgot to relay it to you. It will never happen again. You have my sincerest apologies. And I've never been so proud in that moment, even though I lost that client for a year over that. I was really proud of my colleague who was just able to be accountable, learn from it. And he never did make that same mistake again. And he's actually about ready to become a doctor now, which is pretty incredible.
Awesome. Now, that's taking the hit. That is one of the things, that's actually one of the chapters I have in the book. Is that's when you've got to own your mistakes. We're all humans and we're not perfect, and we're going to be making some of those mistakes. And accountability didn't always, it didn't come to me. When I first started as a part-time salesperson, 6 months into it, I was with the top salesperson in the company. They gave me a store to run, and it was the store that pretty much I got it by default because no one applied for it. And I had three other employees. I remember my district manager calling me, hey, Hernani, I noticed you didn't apply for this job. I'm like, you probably have all these other great candidates, you know? He goes, well, you should just go through the experience. He asked me a few questions and then he told me I got the job. And that's because no one else applied for it.
Wow.
This is in Stockton, California. And it's a tough neighborhood. So once I got there, everybody was miserable. No one's happy. And then I got in there and we really micromanaged the group. This is what we got to do. We got to get everything clean. And all of a sudden, in 3 months, we set records, and my district manager comes in, and he gives us our bonus checks. Everybody's got bonus checks. Then he takes me out to go eat, and I thought we're going to go to, like, Ruth Chris or some place like that. Nice. Takes me to Sizzler. He goes, Hernani, you're doing a good job. You've got the store doing well, but unfortunately, nobody wants to work with you. And I couldn't believe it. That was when my heart broke. Nobody wanted to work with me. I thought I did everything I possibly could. They're on top of their game. They're getting their bonus checks. We've moved up. Our store's now outperforming most stores, but nobody wants to work with me. And then that left a mark, and I had to take action and really learn from it on stuff that I was doing it. And at the end of the day, when it came down to it, I was a gotcha manager. I was one of those that, I got you doing this right, you're doing this wrong, you're doing that wrong, this is how you're supposed to do it. I was all over them. And once I start understanding the second P of accountability, which is positive accountability, catching people doing things right, magnifying that. And I never thought that positivity was accountability, but it is. And that's really when you start seeing the magic happen. And I was able to turn it around. And now the team ended up giving me one of the awards that I cherish to this day for being their best leader. And I had to completely turn it around from that. So I really appreciate my district manager telling me that nobody wanted to work with me. That was a tough conversation, but I needed to hear that.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And the thing is, too, is so what advice would you give to somebody who might be in a similar position? You know, to one level or another, you can feel very proud of yourself if your team is producing great numbers and you're results-oriented and your company is performing. On the one hand, that seems great. But then how would you tell somebody to be open to that feedback or to be able to respond in a powerful way rather than react when they get feedback like that in a business setting?
Yeah. And kind of growing up in my career, I didn't like feedback. I thought it was just my way or the highway type of thing. And once I really understood that feedback is there as a gift, it's there to help you to become better. And don't get me wrong, there's sometimes you get feedback. There's just, you know, people that may label you or they may give you something negative, but if people are saying the same thing over and over and they're different people saying the exact same type of feedback. That's where you got to take action and reflect and start owning it, owning that personal accountability part and finding a way that you can make some improvements. And many times your team will help you. You just got to go up to your team and ask them, hey, I have not been the best manager or leader for you, and I'd like to make some improvements. So what are some things that I can do more of as a leader? And what are some things I can do less of as a leader? And your staff will love to tell you. They may think you might be setting them up the first time, but if you truly reflect, take notes, and then take action and start making some of those improvements, you're going to start quickly winning some hearts from your existing team.
So I'm going to ask you a question that I just posed to a wonderful gentleman who we were just talking a couple of days ago about how to deal with the office vampires. So let's say we're talking about you go out, you're a leader in an organization, or maybe it's peer-to-peer, and we're talking about accountability, and that's great, and you've gotten some feedback. What if you're not the time suck or the emotional vampire in the office? What if it's somebody else in your office? How does accountability play into that when you have somebody else who's draining the team without being punitive about it?
Yes, the energy vampire.
The unforgivable. Vampire.
Yeah, it's the ones that just suck all the energy. When they walk into their negative Nellies are the first ones to tell you, I told you so, it's not going to work. They shoot down all your ideas. Sometimes that's good. You can get some good feedback from them. But if they're really taking the team down, it becomes very cancerous. One, it's gonna kill your attitude. I almost left the company one time because I did have that energy vampire. And it wasn't until I finally talked to the leader of that specific department. And when you do that, if you come in with your opinions, no one's really going to listen to you. But if you can provide the facts of this individual, this is what they did, and you provide three specific facts on how they handled it, normally the leader is going to be very open-minded, and that's how you should address it. And I actually have a very good success rate with energy vampires, and I'll normally bring them in. I will sit them down, and I'll let them know very frank that they are being an energy vampire. They're sucking the energy out of the team. And many times they'll get defensive, and then I'll provide to them these three factual things. You can't debate a fact. You can debate an opinion, and that's where normally you have conflict. But many times once you start, you actually provide that fact to them, they will start coming up with solutions on how they can improve. And there's a couple stories where I've seen that individual just turn around because no one had the courage to step up and talk to them about it. Throughout my career, normally leaders would always give me the most difficult people for that reason, because I had that, let's talk about it, but then I would always be there, and I had that love for humanity because I want them to become a better person, and I would start guiding them in that direction.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I was just on a plane the other day, and I always find the most interesting people on planes and how the discussions unravel when you're forced to sit next to somebody for 1 or 4 or 10 hours. And this gentleman and I, he's an executive, started talking about this very topic about accountability and how it was one of his passions. And I had never heard this concept before. And he said, I think it's like a Six Sigma sort of thing for any of our listeners out there who might be familiar with that. It's a Six Sigma lean training about efficiency in organizations. And he said, say, for example, you have a project and you have green, yellow, and red on the project. Red means the project stopped. Yellow means it's like kind of in a slow-mo, and green means the project is good and moving forward. He said, if you go to the person who's in charge of the project that was green 2 weeks ago and now it's red, you might say to that person, well, you know, what's going on? Why is the project not on time or on target? And the individual might first blame a situation and might say, well, I didn't receive the deliverables from Bob in procurement or whatever it might be. And what he said is you actually want to ask the five whys, which is you want to ask people why five times to the point where they get to own whatever it is. Because once you get to the fifth why, first it's, well, Bob didn't get me the deliverables. Okay, well, why didn't Bob get you the deliverables? Well, Bob didn't get me the deliverables because he was waiting for them from Susie. Okay, well, why didn't Susie? And eventually when you get to the crux of it, at some point or another, the person has to use the word I. And I had never heard that before, because from an accountability standpoint, a lot of us, in it's human nature to be the victim of our circumstances. Well, why didn't you show up to work today? Well, my carburetor was broken. Well, why was that broken? Well, because of this or that. And we blame people in situations. But what I liked that he said is eventually you have to use the word I didn't do blah, blah, blah. And that gives you an opportunity to take ownership rather than blaming the people in situations. What are your thoughts on that?
100%. That's, you want to get them to that point. Now, I don't agree with using the why. I've actually, that doesn't normally work well for me. When you use why, it normally gets very quickly, very debatable. And they start playing defense, like, uh-oh, I'm busted. And I know now I do that. Yeah, I do that with my teenage daughter. Why? I get a different tone. She starts getting very defensive, and the outcome's going to be poor. So what I've learned is to, instead of saying why, is tell me more. So tell me more how you went from yellow to red now. Okay, it's because there's so-and-so's deliverables. Okay, so tell me more about that, how that happened. And it just becomes more conversational. And I've noticed I don't have to go down to the sixth sigma. It's only within the first two or three that they own up and just take accountability and say, I screwed up. That's not going to happen again. You're going to see it next week. We're going to go to yellow. Or I'll say, how are we going to get there? And have them provide that. But it just, I tend to get a better response when I stay away from why.
I love that. And I think that's really important, is because, like you said, why, and I remember hearing this from another business leader years ago, who said, if you do use the word why, it can cause people to be reactive, because it almost actually brings up stuff from our childhood. You know, why didn't you do your homework? Why did you get an F? What about this? You know, and people tend to get very defensive, to your point. So I love that idea of saying, oh, can you tell me a little bit more, and approaching it from a place of curiosity rather than making them wrong and putting them on the defensive.
Absolutely. And there's two sides to every story. So it's human nature for us to go, okay, there's a reason why they're not doing that. They could just, something else is sucking up their time. But there's always two sides to every story, to where we just got to dig into. It could be something at home that's personally affecting that person that maybe now you can help them out. But if you truly go into every single relationship, even that energy vampire, if you have a chance to go in there and truly ask them, tell me more why your behavior is like this. And you do that a few times, it could be something that's really deep that they may need some counseling for. All of us have some histories or some things that we haven't let go. But once you really understand someone's personal history, you can really start becoming a coach and helping them and mentoring them to become a better person.
I agree completely. And another thing I've noticed in the business world with mentoring and managing team members is that if we go in with a preconceived notion of how that meeting is going to go, let's say, for example, you have the emotional vampire who's the time suck in the office that drives everybody crazy. Sometimes we have this pre-recorded story in our head of how that meeting is going to go. Well, Jim's just going to be a jerk because that's how Jim responds to everything. And so you go in to that meeting with a filter looking for the ways that Jim is going to be a jerk and suck all the energy out of the room. Or one thing I found to be accountable myself in meetings where I'm a leader or team manager is to actually say, huh, what's one thing I really like about Jim that Jim's been doing well? And to open and lead up with that. And then also to choose my perspective about how I would love the meeting to go with Jim. Like, gosh, you know, what are the things Jim does well? Well, Jim can suck the energy out of the room, but Jim is also really good at business development and client development. And maybe I could put Jim in a role where he could be accountable for helping train others on that. So that way he's not as tempted to go out there and spend his time gossiping or sucking time and energy out of the room by whining. And now he has a way to be constructive and help the team.
Exactly. And they'll come around too. And they're going to be very grateful that you have that commitment and dedication to say, hey, this is your baby. I want you to own it. How do we get there? And they're like, wow, no one's ever done that because nobody is willing to take a stab at and give them that responsibility. Do you golf, Jennifer?
I golf poorly. I golf very poorly, but golf. Yes.
But golf. So the analogy there is when you're up at that ball and you're looking out to where you need to hit the ball, many times if there's water, people are looking at that water and they're thinking, I should not hit the ball in the water. Don't hit the ball in the water. Don't hit the ball in the water. Then you get up there. What do? You hit the ball in the water because that's what
of
you're
course.
Thinking. So if you really got to step back, you really can't step up to that ball until you tell yourself, I'm going to put that ball on the green. And you're starting to think about the outcome that you want. And I think that ties in directly to your story about coming in and more focused on the outcome that you want versus the outcome that you don't want because we're scared of it. So I love that story that you shared with.
So tell me a little bit about this, Hernani. When we're talking about teams and being able to execute strategies, that's one of the things I loved about the press release that your publicist sent, is that you have a lot of leaders who are unsuccessful in actually achieving things that they set out to achieve. What are a couple of things that you would suggest to people as far as how to empower people through allowing them to fail when they need to fail, but actually be able to implement the strategies they want to implement by creating accountability in that sort of a culture?
Yeah, so it's gonna start with them first. So there's three P's, and I kind of mentioned the second one, but the first one's personal accountability. So I always ask them, who's the most important person in your life? And normally when I ask people that, I'll get, it's going to be my children, or it's going to be my spouse, or it's going to be my parents. And I truly ask them again, okay, so really think back, who's the most important person in your life? If you didn't exist, how could you help those other people? I'm like, then they truly understand it's me. I'm the most important person that I really need to, if I'm going to help these other people that are very important, I need to reflect myself and start making some changes and taking action and get into that point. So many times we'll say we want to, let's just say lose 10 pounds and we kind of get into it and then we lose some of that accountability. But that's where you really got to have somebody to help you out, somebody that's willing to tell you we should probably eat kale salad today instead of that corn dog for lunch. And that's where that personal accountability part of it goes. People that if you think you're just going to go by yourself and say, I'm going to lose 10 pounds and on your own, your success rate's very minor. But if you tell other people that I want to lose 10 pounds, will you help me get there? And you kind of tag team maybe up with someone else that wants to lose some weight and you both hold yourself accountable, your success rate goes up so much higher.
I love that. Okay. So that's one P. And I know we talked about the second P. Remind me of that one.
That one's positive accountability. That's where you catch people doing things right, really magnify that, celebrate the small wins. For example, my daughter, when she was 8 years old, I was heading over to the golf range. Since we kind of brought up golf, I was going to hit some balls. And she goes, I want to come along. Well, when she got there, I was like, okay, I'm going to make sure she does everything right. So I taught her how not to slice the ball, how to hit it, and so forth. Well, 8 years old, she had a miserable time, didn't hit the ball. She came home frustrated and never went out with me again. So I messed that one up. 4 years later, now my son is 8. Now, and I kind of reflected. I always debrief, like, okay, what could I have done better? And by this time, I knew positive accountability and how it works. So my son, 8 years old, we go out there, and I celebrate all small wins. Anytime he hits the ball, great. It doesn't matter how far it went, but we celebrated and had a good time. We come home, and we're talking about it, and he wants to go out the next day. And my daughter hears it, and she goes, Dad, I want to go out. She's 12 now. And guess what we did? I celebrated with her. We had high five. So much that now she made the varsity team as a freshman.
Wow.
In high school. She plays tournaments and she's beating Dad all the time. And I almost messed it up because I wasn't celebrating those small wins. So that's where that positivity accountability is, where you really start seeing the magic happen, especially with your teens.
That's amazing. And then what was the third piece? So the first one is personal. The second one is positive. And then the third one is?
This is where most leaders always want to go to. This is right when they think accountability, it's all about performance. And that's so the last P is performance accountability. It is, but you really need to do the other two first, personal and then positive. And once you get to performance, this is really where things start to take off. And many times they start taking off by themselves. This is where you have peer-to-peer accountability. Everybody's holding each other accountable. Me as your leader, I'm holding myself accountable. And that's where you really start getting into scoreboards, where you have a public scoreboard where everybody knows where they rank, how they're doing, who's really helping the team, who's holding the team back, and how you can really help each other out. So that's the performance part of accountability.
I love that. So tell me, obviously, we could talk all day about accountability, but I'm willing to guess a lot of our listeners who are tuning in, at least today, I know many people tune in after the show, might be heading off to barbecues or already at barbecues today. So tell me, are there any takeaways or any things that you would love our listeners to walk away from today's show with that we didn't get a chance to cover regarding accountability or your book?
Yeah, there's one that's really helped me quite a bit. Actually, believe it or not, I used to be more of a pessimistic. I used to kind of be thinking that I was kind of more the negative Nelly growing up. And once I understood about being grateful and really appreciating things that I have in my life, and you can do this within 21 days to where you can shift your mindset going from a pessimistic person to being optimistic. And there's an app, there's a 5-minute app. So I want everybody, my takeaway, it's not even for me, but if you can get this 5-minute gratitude app, and you can find it on iTunes or whatever, and it really takes 5 minutes, and the science behind it is within 21 days, people are starting to become a lot more optimistic and starting to become more of a game changer, and you're starting to look at things of how you can improve your life. I kind of want to touch on that so people could take advantage of.
And then I love that.
The other last one here is, accountability is such a naughty word that people try to stay away from it. It shouldn't be. Accountability is love. And we all have somebody in our life that has changed us and helped us get to where we're at. And if you haven't told that individual and you really appreciate everything they've done, take a moment. As soon as we're done here with this interview, is call that person. Tell them, thanks for holding me accountable, for guiding me in the right direction. You've been such a big mentor. Because you just never know when Father Time's going to show up. And I know we all have those very important people in our lives. And my dad, I was able to tell him that. He's 84 years old. I get a little choked up when I start thinking about it. But I'm so glad that I did that for him.
That's amazing. One of my dear friends who I haven't talked to in a while said she just moved back to the United States from Africa. And she was trying to get her life sorted, has 3 young kids. And she had her mentor, who she hadn't gotten to speak with in years because she had been living in Africa and just the time change. And she waited 3 months till she got situated and found out her mentor passed away. So, not to be morbid, but to your point, we never know. You know, every day is the one day that we have in that moment. And just to thank the people and be grateful for that moment and those people in our lives and make sure that they know that we're grateful for them as well.
Absolutely. One of my favorite quotes comes from Abraham Lincoln. It's the best way to predict the future is to create it. And this is really where you get to take advantage of it and do something and really help someone else by knowing that they were such a big influence in your life.
Completely agree. Well, Hernani, tell our listeners, where can they buy your book? Give us the title of the book again. If they want to find out more information about perhaps having you as a speaker or learning about working with you, where would they find that out?
Yeah, so my name, Hernani, that's an African name. I was born in Angola, Africa. So the way you spell that is H-E-R-N-A-N-I. But if you go to Amazon.com and just type in balanced accountability, the book will come up. And there you can actually click my name and it goes to an author page and you can learn a lot more about me and how to connect with me. I think that'd probably be the easiest way since my name is a little unique.
Perfect. I love that. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Hernani. It's been a great conversation on accountability. And thank you to everybody who tuned in today from wherever in the world you might be tuning in, and wishing everybody a safe and fun rest of your Memorial Day evening for those of you tuning in from the United States. And if you missed any portion of today's show, do remember that you can find the entire show available about 5 or 10 minutes after the show on the Get Yourself the Job page of the LATalkRadio.com website. It's at the bottom of the page is the archive of this and any prior shows. We can also be found on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. And you can feel free to leave us any ratings, comments, or you can also follow us on Facebook under Get Yourself the Job on Facebook. And there are often a lot of articles that I share specifically on the Facebook page that get sent to me from publicists that don't make it to the show, or just might be an article and not somebody we would have on the show as a guest. So feel free to check that out. And again, thank you so much, Hernani, for joining us and wishing everybody a wonderful rest of your week.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.